Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
The officers understood that the weapon was a war-style weapon.
Its initial purpose was to kill humans efficiently. It is very good at that.
The trauma. And the efforts for change.
I have hope that collectively you will have the courage and the strength to do what is just and right.
Wednesday marks 1 year since an 18-year-old gunman shot dead 19 children and two teachers at the Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. We'll look at the new Frontline documentary, After Uvalde, Guns, Grief, and Texas Politics, with the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa. Then, as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis prepares a run for the White House, we look at a sweeping new anti-immigrant law in Florida.
It will criminalize the transportation of undocumented immigrants into Florida. It will impose new employer verification restrictions and hamper the ability of employers to hire immigrants. And it will deny medical services to undocumented immigrants seeking care in state-funded hospitals. So it really can do a lot of harm in the state.
All that and more coming up. To Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy emerged from the White House Monday without a deal to raise the limit on the national debt. McCarthy's high-stakes negotiations with President Biden came just 10 days before the U.S. faces a possible default on loans, with Republicans demanding sweeping cuts to social programs as the price of any deal to raise the U.S. debt ceiling. After the talks, McCarthy shrugged off a reporter's question about whether Republicans would support rescinding the Trump-era tax cuts that overwhelmingly favor corporations and wealthy U.S. residents.
So the problem is not revenue. The problem is spending. I simply believe, like any household, like any business, like any state government, when you're this far out of whack, you have to spend less than you spent last year.
Earlier this month, the Congressional Budget Office reported extending tax cuts passed in 2017 and signed by then-President Trump would add $3.5 trillion to the federal deficit through 2033. This is House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
They've taken revenues off the table. They don't want to revisit the GOP tax scam. It's exploded the debt by $2 trillion to subsidize the wealthy, the well-off, and the well-connected. They said, no, we can't have a conversation about that. Can't have a conversation about revenue. Can't have a conversation about any policy changes that Democrats would like to have. Does that sound like a negotiation? Or is that a hostage-taking situation?
House Democratic Leader Jeffries said he's open to a deal that would see federal spending frozen at current levels. Members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus have rejected that idea. They're calling on President Biden to invoke his authority to avert a debt default under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. Russia's war in Ukraine spilled back into Russian territory Monday as self-described anti-Kremlin Russian militias launched cross-border raids into the Belgorod region of southwestern Russia. Groups calling themselves the Russian Volunteer Corps and the Freedom of Russia Legion claim to have captured the Russian border town of Kozinka and several others. This is an unnamed fighter with the group in a video released Monday.
Мы такие же россияне, как и вы. Мы такие же люди, как и вы.
We are Russians just like you. We are people just like you. We want our children to grow up in peace and be free people so that they can travel, study, and just be happy in a free country. But this has no place in today's Putin's Russia. Rotten from corruption, lies, censorship, restrictions on freedoms, repressions.
In a statement, Russian officials said they'd opened a terrorism investigation against anti-Kremlin militia fighters in Belgorod. Meanwhile, a recent UN report accuses mercenaries from Russia's Wagner Group of involvement in a March 2022 massacre in a village in Mali in Africa, which killed at least 500 people. Most of those are believed to be civilians rather than Islamist militants, as claimed by authorities. The report also says the attack by Malian troops and Wagner in Moura included rapes and torture. Wagner mercenaries operate in Mali and at least six other African nations, where they've been accused of atrocities, while the U.S. has said Wagner is trafficking natural resources from African nations to fund the invasion of Ukraine. India's meteorological department has issued heat alerts for the capital, New Delhi, and several states as daytime temperatures soar to 45 degrees Celsius, or more than 113 degrees Fahrenheit. Parts of the northern state of Uttar Pradesh have suffered blackouts of more than 12 hours, coming despite a government order that all power plants run at full capacity. In Alberta, Canada, forecasters say rain and cooling temperatures should help firefighters bring a record-smashing spring wildfire season under control after some 2.3 million acres burned. Smoke from the fires has prompted air quality alerts in U.S. states, including Colorado, Idaho, Montana, and Utah. On Monday, the World Meteorological Organization reported extreme weather events caused some 2 million deaths since 1970, with over 90% of those killed from the global south. The Biden administration has reached a three-year deal with Western states to conserve water from the Colorado River. Under the agreement, the federal government will distribute $1.2 billion to water districts and tribes in California, Arizona, and Nevada to compensate them for cutting back their water use. The plan hopes to slash water use from the Colorado River by 13%. 30 years of drought fueled by the climate crisis have reduced the river's natural flow by about 20%. Conservationists welcome the agreement, but said a more permanent solution is needed to protect both the river and the 40 million people who rely on it for agriculture, drinking water, and electricity. Nevada lawmakers have approved a measure that would protect people from out of state who travel to Nevada seeking an abortion from prosecution. The bill now heads to Republican Governor Joe Lombardo's desk. Lombardo's office said he hadn't yet decided if he would sign it into law. In related news, eight more women have joined a lawsuit against Texas's near-total abortion ban, arguing the restrictions put their health and lives at risk as they were forced to carry out pregnancies despite experiencing medical emergencies. Five other women had initially filed the lawsuit in March. South Carolina Republican Senator Tim Scott has entered the race for his party's 2024 presidential nomination. Scott officially announced his candidacy Monday at a campaign rally in North Charleston.
Joe Biden and the radical left are attacking every single rung of the ladder that helped me climb. And that's why I'm announcing today that I'm running for president of the United States of America.
South Carolina Senator Scott is the 11th black senator in U.S. history and only the second African-American Republican senator since Reconstruction in the 1860s and 70s. He has an A rating from anti-abortion and pro-gun groups. The writer E. Jean Carroll seeking further damages in a defamation lawsuit against Donald Trump after he mocked her in a May 10th televised town hall event broadcast live on CNN while an audience packed with Trump supporters laughed and applauded his remarks. Carroll seeking at least $10 million in additional compensation. Earlier this month, a New York jury in a separate lawsuit found Trump liable for sexually abusing her at the Bergdorf Goodman department store in the 1990s and defaming her, ordering Trump to pay $5 million. Meanwhile, federal prosecutors led by special counsel Jack Smith have filed a subpoena seeking information about the Trump Organization's deals in seven countries since 2017. The probe suggests Smith is looking into possible connections between Trump's foreign business dealings and classified documents taken to Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort after he left office. The U.S. Secret Service has detained the driver of a rental truck that crashed into security barriers outside the White House Monday night. No one was injured in the ramming. Investigators found a Nazi swastika flag in the truck and say the driver hit the barriers at least twice in an apparently deliberate attack. In Arizona, the FBI has launched an investigation into the fatal shooting of the respected Tohono O'odham artist and leader Raymond Mattia, who was gunned down by Border Patrol agents outside his home last Thursday. Mattia lived in the community of Menander's Dam, just a few miles from the U.S.-Mexico border. He'd called Border Patrol after finding a group of migrants on his property. Mattia's family says he went outside when the agents arrived and that he was about 2 feet from his front door when they heard gunshots. His relatives are demanding justice as authorities have released few details into what happened. This comes as more details have emerged on the death of an 8-year-old migrant girl from Panama in the custody of Customs and Border Protection last week. Anadith Tane Reyes Alvarez suffered from a congenital heart condition and sickle cell anemia, according to her family. Reyes, her parents and siblings were detained in Texas for over a week. While in custody, Reyes became sick with influenza. She later appeared to have a seizure and had difficulties breathing. It wasn't until her body went limp and she began bleeding from the mouth that border agents took her to a local hospital where the girl was pronounced dead less than an hour after arriving. Her mother, Mabel Alvarez, told the New York Daily News, quote, she cried and begged for her life and they ignored her. They didn't do anything for her, she said. In Georgia, the gruesome death of LaShawn Thompson, a 35-year-old black man in the Fulton County Jail last year, has been ruled a homicide due to severe neglect. The findings of the independent autopsy were released Monday by Thompson's family and civil rights attorney Ben Crump. Thompson was being held in the jail's psychiatric wing, where his family says he was eaten alive by insects and bedbugs in his cell. The report found the lack of medical treatment for Thompson's schizophrenia, as well as dehydration, malnutrition, rapid weight loss, and, quote, severe body insect infestation, all contributed to his death. Thompson's independent autopsy, which was funded by former NFL star Colin Kaepernick, came after the Fulton County medical examiner ruled his cause of death was undetermined. In Hollywood, members of the SAG-AFTRA Actors Union have set a June 5th deadline for 160,000 members to cast ballots in a strike authorization vote. In recent days, actors have joined Hollywood writers on picket lines after some 11,500 members of the Writers Guild of America went on strike May 2nd to demand livable wages as corporate profits soar. On Sunday, students at Boston University graduation ceremony booed and chanted, "Pay your writers," as Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav delivered the commencement address.
If you want to be successful, you're going to have to figure out how to get along with everyone. And that includes difficult people.
Dozens of transgender children and youth from across the country gathered in Washington, D.C. Monday for a prom celebrating trans lives. The prom was held on the National Mall near the Capitol as anti-LGBTQ attacks intensify nationwide. This is trans activist Chase Strangio, a staff attorney at the ACLU, one of the organizers of the action.
These young people are here with the families and trans adults who love and care for them. Today, we are choosing to build upon the legacies of our ancestors, embracing the possibilities of our futures, and refocusing our collective imagination on the freedom, beauty, and joy that we represent. Our joy is ours. You may not see it. You may not think it exists. You may try to take it away, but it is ours. And today and every day, we celebrate, cultivate, and embrace it.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, Wednesday marks 1 year since an 18-year-old gunman shot dead 19 children and 2 teachers at the Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. We'll speak with the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa about her new Frontline documentary, After Uvalde, Guns, Grief, and Texas Politics. Stay with us.
All I need is a little time. to live with you.
Air featuring Beth Hirsch. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A candlelight vigil will be held Wednesday in Uvalde, Texas, to mark 1 year since the second deadliest school shooting in U.S. history. On May 24th last year, an 18-year-old gunman armed with a semi-automatic AR-15 rifle entered his former elementary school. He shot dead 19 children between the ages of 9 and 11 and two of their teachers. Nearly 400 officers rushed to Robb Elementary School, but it took them 77 minutes to confront the gunman. Investigators found officers had, quote, failed to prioritize saving innocent lives over their own safety, unquote. All of this is examined in a new documentary called After Uvalde, Guns, Grief, and Texas Politics. In the special, produced by Frontline, Futuro Media, and the Texas Tribune, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa travels to Uvalde to report on the tragedy. This is how it begins.
Every 2 years, the Texas legislature comes to session. Early 2023, and a busy time here at the Capitol.
The Senate of the 88th legislative session will come to order.
Lawmakers are voting on bills about everything, from the cost of fuel to property taxes. Many without controversy.
Is there an objection to the adoption of the resolution? The chair hears none. The resolution's adopted.
But in this session, the legislature is facing the divisive issue of guns.
It's none of your business how many guns I own.
After one of the deadliest school shootings in history.
We defend the Constitution.
We do everything to protect these guns. Let's just try something to protect our children.
An unimaginable tragedy in Texas.
Gunman opened fire at Robb Elementary.
On May 24th, 2022, accounts of yet another mass shooting in our country began to hit the news.
Armed with a long rifle, clad in body armor.
Within days of his 18th birthday, a young man legally bought two AR-15 style weapons, and a week later walked into his old fourth grade classroom.
No subject with an AR.
And opened fire.
Death toll in the Uvalde school massacre stands at 19 kids, two adults.
An excerpt of the new Frontline documentary After Uvalde, Guns, Grief, and Texas Politics, which airs on PBS on May 30th. This is the trailer.
No subject with an AR.
In collaboration with the Texas Tribune, Futuro Media's Maria Hinojosa examines the police response.
The officers understood that the weapon was a war-style weapon.
Its initial purpose was to kill humans efficiently. It is very good at that.
The trauma. And the efforts for change.
I have hope that collectively you will have the courage and the strength to do what is just and right.
For more, we're joined by the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa, founder of Futuro Media and host of Latino USA. She anchors this new documentary, After Uvalde, Guns, Grief, and Texas Politics, again a production of Frontline, Futuro Media, and the Texas Tribune. Maria Hinojosa is also co-host of the podcast In the Thick and author of the memoir Once I Was You. Maria, welcome back to Democracy Now! This is a powerful documentary that's going to air next week. Talk about your investigation of the Uvalde massacre with this, as you said, 18-year-old gunman, days after his birthday, legally purchases two AR-15s with how many rounds of ammunition? Something like 375 rounds of ammunition. In Texas, you have to be 18 years old to buy a rifle. The state does not require a license to openly carry one in public. You tell the story through the people who survived and the loved ones of those who did not. Take us on that journey, Maria.
Hey, Amy, it's great to be with you again, and thank you for talking about this. You know, it's interesting. Many of the families in Uvalde actually feel like they're ignored. They feel, what I was able to gather in my reporting, some of them have said that there are people kind of in Uvalde and in Texas that are just like, can you get over this? I was incredibly surprised and hurt by that sentiment. And so, like many of us in the country, what happened in Uvalde was so particular. You have a Latino kid going into his old fourth grade classroom and taking out his own. I mean, Uvalde is this big, so everybody knows each other. And I needed to understand what happened to this young man that he became obsessed. In fact, Amy, I don't know if you know this, but his nickname, because people knew him, his nickname was School Shooter. So everything was right there in front of everybody to say, wow, this is a real problem that we have here. Well, there's one psychiatrist in all of Uvalde. So even though the governor talks about wanting to support efforts to treat mental health, in a town like Uvalde, which is an hour away from the U.S.-Mexico border, which is a majority Latino town, the other thing that I heard, Amy, is that historically Uvalde just feels neglected, like they've never really been cared for. And so the help, the mental health help that the governor says he was going to put out there in order to stop more shootings didn't get to Uvalde. So that's one thing. The other thing, Amy, that I came away with so much. I'm not the same Maria Hinojosa before Uvalde and after Uvalde. The things that I have seen, and you know, Amy, we've survived September 11th, and a lot of my 9/11 trauma, I relived that when I was down in Uvalde. The story of Uvalde is one of, yes, this horror, but there's also a history of the people of Uvalde standing up to power. And people might be surprised. What are you talking about? Well, one of the longest student walkouts in American history took place in Uvalde, Texas, in 1970, because the kids, organized, because in Robb Elementary and the other schools in Uvalde, there was corporal punishment if you spoke Spanish. You're an hour away from the U.S.-Mexico border. Everybody speaks Spanish, but kids as young as 6 years old, as we document in our frontline, if they were heard speaking Spanish by a white teacher, the teacher would take a wet ruler and slap them on the back of their calf. So there is a history of the people of Uvalde saying, hasta aquí, no more, we're not going to take this. Actually, in my reporting, Amy, I realized how important Uvalde is, not just for Texas, but for the country, because it's one of the birthplaces of the Southwestern Chicana movement of the 1960s and 70s. People don't know that about Uvalde and Crystal City.
You know, Maria, so I wanted to go back to a Texas Tribune piece about how Uvalde used to be known, as you were just describing, for that 1970 Latinx student walkout. This features two people who were there, Rebecca Cipria Moreno, a retired Spanish teacher who took part in the boycott, and Alfredo Santos, a walkout organizer. This is Santos.
I was 17 years old. You know, it was seat of the pants. We would plan at night. We'd review what happened during the day. So we started at the high school at 10 o'clock, and people started getting up, and you could see all the people moving. People got up and joined us. We had put together a list of 14 demands. We wanted more Mexican-American teachers. We wanted more books having to do with Mexican-Americans in the library, things like that.
We had no Hispanic teachers. We had all white teachers. We had an all white school board. Hispanic positions were like the cafeteria workers, the custodians. I do sadly remember my second grade teacher. She walked up to me and got me by my ear and just pulled and pulled and pulled and pulled. And I remember crying and crying, and blood was coming down my cheek right here. And I remember the beatings on her hands for speaking Spanish.
That video from the Texas Tribune, which you, Maria Hinojosa, worked with in producing your documentary for Frontline, but so important, as you're describing, and if you could continue talking about fitting it into the Latino history of the United States, movement organizing.
Right. So I find it very interesting, Amy, that this part of the Chicano-Chicana movement, It is known, but it's national history, and Uvalde was part of that. Right now, what you're seeing is part of that tradition of activism that is, as a result of this massacre, that's happening again. So the reporting for us focused on an attempt by some of the families affected in Uvalde to try to raise the age of purchase for an AR from 18 to 21. It's now legal to buy an AR if you are in Texas when you turn 18, which is what this shooter did. And interestingly, Amy, the activism, while there was no change in legislation in Texas because of what happened in Uvalde, just now the legislature is closing down its session, the families did move things. They were able to at least get a point to testify at the Texas State Capitol. And so the act. But the truth is that Uvalde is still very abandoned, muy abandonado. It is a mental health desert. And I'm hoping, this is very personal, this has nothing to do with the front line, but for me personally, I really hope that Uvalde becomes the opposite of a mental health desert, that it becomes a mental health forest, a place where people can go and be surrounded in nature, and the murals for the 19 kids and the two teachers. Uvalde is a beautiful little town, and it should be known for more than just this massacre, which is part of what we're trying to say. Yes, this massacre happened, but also Uvalde is much more complex, and there's a history there that we all need to know.
And that history also inspires the very young. The potent poignancy of this documentary, part of it is the relationship you have with Caitlin Gonzalez, the 10-year-old who survived the massacre, a Robb Elementary School fourth grader who lost two of her best friends in the shooting. This is her last August speaking at a school board meeting in Uvalde, where she demands the firing of the school police chief, Pete Arlando.
If a law enforcement's job is to protect and serve, why didn't they protect and serve my friends and teachers on May 24th? I have messages for Pete Arredondo and all the law enforcement that were there that day. Turn in your badge and step down. You don't deserve to wear one.
Can you tell us, Maria, about Caitlin Gonzalez, who goes on to organize with people from 1970. But tell us her story.
So, Amy, you know, again, people think of Uvalde and it's just like this overwhelming sadness. And again, I'm telling you, I'm a different person since I spent my time in Uvalde. And the thing that gives me so much hope, you know, there's a saying in Mexican Spanish, no hay mal que por bien no venga. There is no bad from which good cannot come. And the good here for me personally is that I've established a relationship with Caitlin Gonzalez, her mom, Gladys, her dad, Neff, and her little sister, Camila. And Caitlin has become that person who has taken the sadness and the rage that she feels. You hear it. She's talking to law enforcement and saying, how could you wait 77 minutes before you came to save the kids in the classroom? And she has transformed that rage into an understanding that her voice has power. And in our documentary, she's working with Lalo Castillo, who is one of the organizers of the 1970 walkout. And you can see, and look, activism in our country is part of our democracy. Some people don't like it, but that is in fact part of our democracy. And so what we're documenting is seeing how Caitlin is understanding the power of her voice. And